This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, so tonight the NBA postseason begins, but it's not quite the postseason just yet. It's the play-in tournament, which is like NBA playoff light, right? It's like the little small version, the appetizer to the meal. So tonight the Atlanta Hawks and the Miami Heat will play, and then the Minnesota Timberwolves will be in Los Angeles to take on the Lakers. So how this works is that each of these teams, whoever wins these games tonight, will head to the postseason as the 7 seed in their conferences. So tonight between the Miami Heat and the Atlanta Hawks, the winner of that game will play the Boston Celtics in round number 1, and the Minnesota Timberwolves and Los Angeles Lakers play tonight, and the winner will advance to face the Memphis Grizzlies. Now, how do you get the 8 seed? Well, because you finished 7-8 in the Western Conference or the Eastern Conference, it doesn't mean you're automatically out if you lose. You get one more chance. So if you are the Atlanta Hawks tonight and you lose to the Miami Heat, you then will be home to host the winner of the games tomorrow that are the 9-10 games. So the Chicago Bulls and the Toronto Raptors are meeting on Wednesday, and the Oklahoma City Thunder and the New Orleans Pelicans are meeting also on Wednesday. The winners of those games get a chance to go from where, which normally would have been outside of the postseason, back into the postseason. So they win, they advance to play the losers of tonight's games. So tonight's games for both of the teams that are playing, it's not a must-win situation. And that's one of the reasons the Minnesota Timberwolves are going shorthanded into their game against the Lakers. Rudy Gobert, their center, made a punch against Kyle Anderson, and then they decided that they were going to keep him home and suspend him. So this is not a must-win situation for Minnesota because, again, they will play another game, a one-game shot, against the winner of the Oklahoma City and New Orleans game. So the suspension for Rudy Gobert was mostly a statement by the team to say that we're not going to tolerate this. Oh, and also they have a player named Jaden McDaniels who punched a wall and broke his hand. So he is out for tonight. In fact, he'll be out for the whole playoffs regardless of where Minnesota goes. So tonight's play-in tournament is, again, we've said this many times, it's a little bit of an addition, it's quirky, but it adds something and a little bit of flavor to the postseason for the NBA because they don't want teams tanking and they want teams to try to fight to get into the playoffs because, and listen, if you're an owner, right, you have two choices. If you're on the bubble, you have two choices. You can close out and want to just get into the lottery, or if you can get into the play-in tournament, if you can win the play-in tournament, you actually get a first round, and that's really good revenue that you get for the games that you have at home. You're guaranteed 2 games at home in the first round, and if you win one or maybe steal another one, you could get another game at home. And so for the owners, they want to get into the playoffs, but they were always in a situation where if it was too much of a hill to climb, why bother? This allows you to sort of go, well, you know what? They're taking 10 teams, but we might get into this. Unless, of course, you're the Dallas Mavericks, who decided to sit everybody in the final games of the season and then decide to get into the lottery instead. I'm not a huge fan, again, of expanding the postseason. I think it devalues postseason, but I do understand the business side of this. And I understand why you would do it if you're the NBA. Tanking is a real problem, especially when you have a game-changing, franchise-changing athlete that is going to be drafted number one overall, and the prize is just too great. But nevertheless, it does add a little bit of excitement. Tonight, you're not watching game one of a series. Tonight, you're watching basically, yeah, like I said, it's not a must-win situation for tonight's games. Tomorrow's it is. Tomorrow it is. So you have Wednesday's games where everything's on the line. When Oklahoma City plays New Orleans, one of these teams, and think about it, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Brandon Ingram are two bright, young NBA stars. They're going to be battling it out on the court. These are two up-and-coming teams that have started to build up. The Pelicans should have been up a little bit more given Zion Williamson, but Williamson just can't stay healthy, so he can't play, and he's not participating in the Pelicans' success. But the Oklahoma City Thunder stripped everything down to the bare bones and are starting to build this thing back up again. And they're not a bad team. They're a pretty good young basketball team that's got a ways to go, but they're fun, and they're vying for a spot in the NBA playoffs. So you have a game tomorrow night that's really fascinating. And then the Bulls, of course, with DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine going up against the Toronto Raptors, who won it all just a couple of years ago with Kawhi Leonard. You've got, again, those are must-win games. So there's a little bit of the NCAA tournament feel these next 2 days with the sort of pressure in the one-game situation. But tonight's not a must-win situation for either of the eight of the four teams that are playing in the two games. They'll have another chance to sort of get in as the eight seed and play either Milwaukee or the Denver Nuggets, depending on their conference. So I'm kind of excited about it. I'm kind of into it. I always kind of, again, it might be my age. I just get a little cynical. I kind of regret. Here's how bad I am. All right, because now the NBA is like, yeah, all the first round games are going to be best of seven. And oh, by the way, we even added another layer to this cake by giving you these play-in tournaments just to make sure the 7 and 8 seed has a little bit more spice to it. I remember when the first round used to be best of five. I used to love best of fives. I loved them. They are so dramatic. They are so pressure. I mean, to need to get a 3 wins in a 5-game series where if you lose at home, you could be in huge trouble rather than in a 7-game series where if you split your first 2 games at home, you know you're at least coming back for game 5. But the 5-game series used to be supremely pressure-packed. So I kind of pine for the older times when we had less playoff action, and rather than today when we had just had playoffs all across the board.
Now, do you think eventually we're going to have like a best of three playing game?
Yeah, that's what I wonder. That's a great point. That's a great point. How much do they find this successful where they go, hey, CBA, do you mind if we actually added a best of three series to it? But I actually kind of like this format. I think it's a kind of interesting way to do it. Which is, yeah, you kind of give you the pressure of the moment. But if you earned a 7 or 8 seed during the regular season, you're not in a must-win game. Like, they're giving you the benefit of at least being, like, you should be getting a bonus, if you will, for getting at least in the top 8. Like, if you're going to change the system, don't punish the 7 and 8 teams by putting them in a 1-game situation. But you put them in a situation where they go, look, you win, you get the 7 seed, and if you lose, you'll host the game that will determine the 8 seed. So you have all the tools in your arsenal to get into the postseason. And you would have just automatically have gotten it in, but we played around with this formula a little bit. But it also, again, if you look at the game that's tomorrow between the Pelicans and the Oklahoma City Thunder, that's actually a really fun game. I mean, it's not Denver versus Phoenix, but it's one of those games that's got bright young stars to it, and the teams that are kind of desperate, and the teams that really want to make the playoffs because I think they've been working for respectability this season. The Pelicans are trying to win respectfully without Zion Williamson at the front. And Oklahoma City is a team that, again, got rid of everybody and said, you know, that's we're going to go in this different direction and building it up. I mean, Billy Donovan left. I mean, they had Chris Paul, obviously. Now he's with Phoenix. They had Russell Westbrook. They had Kevin Durant. They had James Harden all those years. And now they've stripped it down to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and a couple of other guys. Remember they drafted Chet Holmgren from Gonzaga in the second pick of the draft, and he got hurt. I think in the preseason, I think he got hurt. And he didn't play for them all year. So they're a team that is trying to build something and trying to say, look, there's a bright future here, especially when we get Holmgren back. We've got a bunch of young talent. So it's going to be a good showcase of two, you know, young teams. And Atlanta and Miami should be a great matchup. Trae Young, Jimmy Butler. Miami's got an experienced team. Eric Spoelstra. How much of a up-down career has Eric Spoelstra had as the head coach of the Miami Heat? He was on top of the world with the Big Three, you know, winning NBA championships, playing and coaching in NBA finals. Then they all leave, and then eventually he gets them back to the NBA finals in the bubble. And then he, you know, this team that play gets him in the playoffs, but they're not like a 2 seed or anything. But that's the rise and fall of the Miami Heat with Eric Spoelstra at the helm. So tonight, though, there's going to be a lot of focus on the Lakers. How good is this Lakers team right now? When you play 82 games, you can be judged over the 82 games, or you can be judged properly, which is how you've been playing in the final couple of games of the season. And the Lakers have won 9 of their last 11 games. And so right now, fully healthy, LeBron's healthy, Anthony Davis is healthy, they're pretty good to go. They're playing really, really good basketball. Offensively, they're very efficient. They've been playing really fantastic basketball. So everyone started looking at them going, yeah, you know what, they have the play-in tournament, but if they win against this shorthanded Minnesota team, which they should, because, again, Minnesota out with Rudy Gobert and Jaden McDaniels is out as well. If they win that game, now they're a 7 seed going up against Memphis, and people are looking, you know, I wouldn't count on it's not automatic that the Memphis Grizzlies are going to beat the Los Angeles Lakers. This West is so intriguing. I mean, so intriguing, where maybe, just maybe, the better teams in the conference right now, today, are not the teams that are on the top. They're not Denver. That's not Memphis. It may not even be Sacramento. The best teams might be the Phoenix Suns, the Lakers, the Clippers. But Clippers are still without Paul George. But those might be your better teams in the Western Conference. We'll see. It should be a lot of fun. In the East, there's no such debate. I mean, there just isn't. I don't see anybody beating Milwaukee and Boston in the first round. I don't see anybody beating Philadelphia in the first round. I think the Knicks and Cleveland could be a very fun series. Could go 7 games and a good battle between two teams that are pretty equally matched. But I'm sorry, I don't see anybody else. Obviously Brooklyn and Atlanta, Miami, Toronto, Chicago, any of those teams. I don't think anybody's taking down anybody in the top 3 of the Eastern Conference. But the West, oh my God, don't be surprised if the Lakers get to the conference finals.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is hour number one as we continue on Wake Up Call. See, I'm already trying to get ahead and be done with the day.
I hear you.
It's a nice day today.
It is. Gotta get outside.
I've had a week here in Nashville of the most gloomy, depressing, sad weather that we've had, because we transition from winter over to spring and we get rain and gloom and gross, and the bugs are starting to come a little bit. But now today, like yesterday was gorgeous. Today is supposed to be gorgeous. So I'm already trying to advance out on this show today. I'm not mailing it in by any chance, but look out, sunny out today. It's nice. Spring is finally here. So Masters golf and NBA playoffs, one of my favorite moments. You know, we have this fun debate in sports about October versus April. If there was 2 months on the sports calendar that really stick out with terms of its events and everything, it's those 2 months, right? Because the NBA starts, the NHL starts in October. You got the World Series. You're deep into the NFL and college football. So October has got a lot of spark to it. You really are into fall. Like, the leaves are really starting to change. The hoodie weather really starts to kick in. You got Halloween coming up at the end of the month. The burr months are like my favorite time of the year. But then with April, there's this sense of spring. And then, of course, the Masters kick off. You got the NCAA tournament at the beginning of the month. Kind of Final Four-ish time is around that time. And then you kick into the playoffs of both the Stanley Cup playoffs and the NBA playoffs. And, of course, the NFL has its draft at the end of the month. So the terms of variety of sports, April sort of wins out. But both have a change of season that are really, really fun to be a part of. I mean, I love fall. I mean, I just love fall, but it's not fall to me just because football is being played, because I live in, I live below the Mason-Dixon line. So it's still 95 degrees outside in September. It's still really hot in September. It's when the cooler weather kicks in, that's when fall is for me. Like, when my leaves are changing, when my hoodies start to come out, that's when fall kicks in. That's October. And in April, in New Hampshire, when I was growing up in New Hampshire, we could still have snow on the ground. We could still have a late storm. We could still feel a little bit chilly. But we know in April that it's coming because the snow is starting to melt. It's muddy. You're getting a feeling like spring's around the corner. Living here in Nashville, I know now spring's around the corner. We mowed the lawn a couple of times. Flowers are starting to pop up. Leaves are starting to show up. So the two changes of the seasons
the two best months on the sports calendar. I lean towards October just because I like that feeling of being kind of more into the football season around October, and I just like the World Series and all that. But April is it's a great time. It's a great time. So I understand if many of you just don't count this next day or two and Friday's games to be playoff games in the NBA. I can understand where you're like, I'm old school. The NFL, the NBA playoffs for me are when we actually have series, when we have first rounds, best of seven, and we get it underway. That'll be this weekend. Saturday, there's a full slate of NBA playoff games. Sunday, there's some round one, first round games. So I get it. I get it. If tonight and tomorrow you're not interested in it because it doesn't, it just feels too gimmicky to you. But I urge you to watch out, watch for these games tonight, especially the Lakers game. How long does LeBron have before he's done? He wants to play in the league, and when Bronny comes to the league, but after that, isn't the clock ticking? We're starting to see two athletes that dominated the 2000s. Be on the exits of their careers. I mean, I have no idea what Tiger Woods is going to do for golf. I don't know where Tiger Woods is going. By his own words, he doesn't want to be a ceremonial golfer. By his own words. If he did not say that, if he had said, look, I got no problems of showing up. I just love to be a part of it. I love the crowds. I just love being with the guys. And then I would say, well, yeah, the body can heal in a while. He might be able to be back and playing competitive rounds of golf, or at least playing golf as a ceremonial golfer at the Masters, ceremonial golfer at the British Open, you know, showing up at other events on the PGA Tour. But the reality of it is that's not what he wants to do. That's not what he said he wants to do. He wants to be a competitive golfer. At 47 years old with a bad foot and a bad leg, he wants to be competing against Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, and John Rahm. That's who he wants to be competing against. That's not happening. And that's not happening anytime soon. Now, LeBron is making a few last runs here in the NBA where, again, he's made the point that, you know, he wants to stay in the league until Bronny gets to the NBA, maybe play with him on a team. Great. And then what after that? It's probably done for him. So these two athletes, you know, LeBron came into the 2003 draft. Tiger emerged on the tour in 1996, winning the 1997 Masters. They dominated the early parts of the 2000s. We've watched their careers grow from practically teenagers all the way through to professional athletes, all the way through to megastars, billionaire athletes. And we're watching now in 2023 the ending of those runs, the very ending of those runs. LeBron is fighting for a 7 seed in the NBA playoffs. Tiger Woods had to withdraw from the Masters. He made the cut, but he had to withdraw from the Masters. But he was 3 over at the time. So these are athletes that we always see them at the very, very end. Now, LeBron, I think, is going to have one of those sort of full send-off careers, right? I mean, he's going to have one of those careers that, and I don't know how he plays it. I shouldn't really speak way before it happens. Maybe LeBron announces at the beginning of the season that this is his last year. I think, I don't know if he likes that idea of being sort of celebrated around the league when they say, goodbye, LeBron James, thanks for everything. Here in Minnesota, we really appreciate everything you've done for the league, blah, 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 and he gets the tour stop. Or he plays, and then he's over, and then he says, I'm done, whether that's 2 years from now, 1 year from now, whenever that is. But for Tiger, this is a lot more complicated. It really is, because, again, in golf, we don't give you the send-off unless you're at the Masters and you're 69 years old, like, and you're done being competitive. But we don't say goodbye to you completely until you're just done. You just end up walking away. You don't go, this is my final year, and I'm going to stop at all these tour events and say goodbye. You just sort of turn 50 and then go to the Champions Tour. And maybe you show up at other events. But for Tiger being injured, what's his mindset? What is his mindset as he processes, now that he's back home, what is he processing on what his future is going to be like? I mean, if that surgically repaired leg is never 100%, but it's 90%. Is that good enough? I've not seen Tiger Woods play a round of golf where he's not aching, where he's not in constant pain.
It's been a long time.
Think about it. When was the last time we saw Tiger Woods play a round of golf where he wasn't in constant pain? Before the car accident.
Definitely before the car accident. Would it be the 2019 Masters?
I think he played after that.
Yeah.
You know, so he played another majors after that.
I almost feel like even in the Masters, he was hurt in some way.
Yeah, because he had three back surgeries. Like, the guy is just, he's Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, remember the little fun charts we used to get of Ben Roethlisberger? They were always like, and then in 2010, he had this repaired, and he had this repaired. He was like the $6 million man.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, and that was Roethlisberger's career. Like, you would watch Ben Roethlisberger and all the injuries that he had in his playing quarterback for the Steelers. Tiger Woods is Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, back fusions, this back thing, this ankle, this leg. He's had it all. He is the most banged up golfer that we've had. And, you know, it's funny because people have been wondering, Bryson DeChambeau decided, what the heck? I might as well become a gym rat and work out in the gym and bulk up, and I'll swing the club at 130 miles an hour, right? Well, people were saying, your body can't do that. Like, you can't do that. You can't put that kind of torque on your body and not have some damage. And sure enough, Bryson DeChambeau got hurt. Sure enough, Bryson DeChambeau was like, yeah, maybe this wasn't such a good idea. Tiger Woods, while he wasn't Bryson DeChambeau in terms of that level, was one of the first golfers to go, I'm going to the gym. I'm training like a Navy SEAL. I'm going to put muscle on this body. Like, all you other golfers got a little paunchy little gut and all that. I'm going to be an Adonis. And he was out there working, and his body was just ripping through the golf ball. And all of a sudden he was like, well, got a back problem, got a back thing, got a back issue, got a herniated disc, all these things. And he's getting fusions, and he can barely walk. He is a football player on the PGA Tour. He is a football level athlete in terms of his injuries playing professional golf. Right? I had a chance yesterday to go on YouTube and watch Phil Mickelson's press conference because they didn't talk to Phil Mickelson on CBS. And one of the things he said was, at 53 years old, they told him, how is it that you finish second at the Masters, you win the PGA all past 50? He said, I've stayed healthy. I have avoided injuries. Whereas another superstar golfer has not done that. Some by his own golf, some by a car accident, and he's almost out of the game.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I was just listening to this song yesterday while I was doing some editing and stuff. I just usually throw on a YouTube mix channel that's got a bunch of songs, and sometimes they're good and I skip them, and sometimes they're good. And this is Cake.
This is Cake.
Short Skirt, Long Jacket. Yeah. I like this song. This is actually kind of catchy.
You try your best not to go down the wormhole that's just dangling right there sometimes from those songs. I do the same, and then I'll sit there and be like, you know what, let me read into this a little bit more. Boom, man, gone.
I was at the gym last night, and I'm the old guy. I listen to, I got Pandora.
Yeah.
And I have a 80s channel that I just listen to, just songs from the 80s. And Tears for Fears came on. Everybody Wants to Rule the World. Everybody, you know. And I was like, that is good poetry right there. Like, those are good lyrics.
Yeah.
Like, I had to look up the lyrics. I even posted them last night on Facebook because I was like, these are good lines.
I got to share a story. I'm proud of my oldest.
Yeah.
So we went to the zoo on Saturday. He brought his girlfriend with him. And, we stopped off at the gas station to get some drinks and snacks for the car ride there, just to have, munch on while we're walking around the zoo. And Queen's Under Pressure was on.
Oh, yeah.
And he turned to his girlfriend and said, yeah, Vanilla Ice stole this. And she was like, no, it's the other way around. And he was like, no, Queen is much older than Vanilla Ice, and set the record straight for her. And I couldn't be more proud.
That's good. That's awesome. Yeah.
But I was a little disappointed in girlfriend's mom. Because mom is the one who said that no, Queen was being sued by Vanilla Ice for taking this.
Well, how old is girlfriend's mom?
See, I got to figure that
young?
Out. She is a little on the younger side. Okay. I wouldn't say, I thought she was around the same age as us, but I guess not. Maybe she is a little bit younger. Yeah. You know, I mean, he's.
Vanilla Ice actually got sued for that.
Yes.
Yeah, and he was trying to, he goes, it's just got a little bit of change.
I mean, I think she's a New Kids on the Block fan. You know, maybe she just had misinformation and thought Queen took it from her. But it's like,
maybe
come on now.
Maybe so. All right. So,
yeah. But I was proud. I was proud. He knew the origin.
Yeah. So, good stuff. Good. Yeah. I don't know. I always wonder what other people at the young people at the gym listen to. And then I'm always like, I got.
Oh, I know.
80s music. Like, and that's what's going on in my AirPods. This is the 80s channel. I got two channels. I got Fleetwood Mac channel and 80s channel. That's how old I am. I'm too old for this.
See, I'll do 90s alternative. I'll throw a 90s alternative channel on there because that's, you know, that's my speed. Yeah, you know, when I take my kids to practice, I let them pick out the music. And there's a lot of times I sit there and go, what are we listening to?
Nah, I know.
Oh, I like the beat, Dad. Oh, yeah, get rid of that. That's
terrible. I got to give a shout out to the kids. I don't go to the gym a lot. I'm not a gym rat. I just go just to try to keep in shape a little bit, you know, because I eat terrible. And so every time I go, it's the same group of kids I see all the time. They're all into it. They're all helping each other. And I've become the guy that they give fist bumps to. They don't even know me. They don't know my name. I don't know their names, but they'll see me and they'll give me a fist pump and whatnot. And it feels kind of cool. Like there's, you know, like, well done, fat guy at the gym. Like, way to go. But I give them all the credit because they're there all the time. They've got a solid group. No matter when I go, which is very infrequent, I don't even have a set schedule. I will just, if I have a free night, I'm like, I got a half an hour, an hour. I'll run over there. It's only a couple minutes, 2 minutes up the road from my house. But I see them all the time, and they all work together, and they laugh, and they have a good time. And I give them a lot of credit. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Rather than going out and about, they're all working out at the gym. You know, young kids in their 20s. All trying to look better every day. But now it's kind of neat. It's kind of neat that they still recognize this old guy coming in all the time. Still, they've helped me with a couple of things, you know, where I've worked, you know, I've asked how machines work and whatnot, but that's kind of fun. But man, I'm getting too old. I'm telling you, I have the age gap is ridiculous. Like, that's when I realize, like, I'm getting older. Like, the age gap is crazy.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, man, it's got 20 something years on these kids.
That, you know, and I'm looking at, it's a weird feeling when you start looking at athletes.
That's exactly right.
You know, because I'm looking at different athletes now, and, you know, like, you know, say over the Masters over the weekend, Jon Rahm, and then you hear his age, and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
I mean, he's not the same age as me. He's not older than me. It's like you're really starting to realize that, no, these are all young kids.
How do you think Phil Mickelson feels? Mickelson was talking in this press conference. It didn't hit me that CBS did not do any after-round interviews with any golfer from LIV. Phil Mickelson did not do any interviews. Maybe it was by his choice. I doubt it.
Nah, I don't think it was by his choice at all.
I think it was CBS and the Masters' choice. Like, normally they would go, hey, Phil, congratulations. He's standing. No. So I found his press conference at the Masters, and I listened to it. Because I was like, well, what does Phil think about this amazing 65 that he shot? The fact that he came in second at 52 years old. He'll be 53 in June.
And the fact that no one talks about it.
Right.
It's like the quietest runner-up situation placing ever.
They asked him about Jon Rahm, and they said, you know, what do you think of Jon Rahm? And he goes, because Jon Rahm went to Arizona State. His brother was the coach at Arizona State, and obviously Phil went there too in college in the 90s, mm-hmm. 80s and 90s. So he's known Jon Rahm since Jon Rahm was a college kid, since he came on the campus, because his brother was the coach there and recruited him. And so he's known Jon Rahm forever. And he told a story about how he played Jon when Jon was a kid, freshman at Arizona State or whenever he was. And he says, and he beat me by like 7 shots. He goes, I knew then he was a world championship golfer. Like, Phil is, imagine what Jon Rahm thought of Phil at that time 10 years ago. Phil was 42. I mean, come on. Like, Phil Mickelson is playing incredible golf at the Masters at 52 years old. That he is talking about finishing runner-up to a kid he met when he was in his early 40s who was a freshman at Arizona State. That's crazy.
And it's really a shame that
That's
CBS...
That's an age gap.
But it's really a shame that CBS and Masters went this route.
I know. I did. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure if it's CBS dictating it. We know that the Masters dictates what can be seen and what can't be seen.
Right. Patrick Reed didn't get an interview.
Yeah.
Nothing.
I mean, and all we've been hearing from Brooks Koepka is just one complaint after another.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. No doubt. Yeah.
This happened. That happened. John Rahm went to the bathroom 7 times.
That was, hey, so.
Yeah, it happens.
Part of that conversation was. So if you follow golf, the Masters takes place, and then right after the Masters is the RBC Heritage. It's held on Hilton Head Island in South Carolina, and it's always been that way. But it works great for the players because Augusta is not that far, and the guys just boogie down the state of South Carolina, and because Augusta is kind of on the border, and they just go right down and they go to beautiful Hilton Head at this time of year. It's gorgeous. It's a great place, beautiful location, easy golf course. It's not difficult. It's not like Augusta where you're mentally breaking down on every hole trying to figure out angles. It's pretty flat. It's pretty simple. And they go there, and it's like another second payday. So a lot of the world's best golfers who have PGA Tour eligibility will boogie down to Hilton Head, and Hilton Head gets one of the top – it gets one of the more tougher fields for your average tournament. But the LIV golfers, Phil was talking about their schedule. So the LIV golfers, they left Augusta. This week, they're going to gather with their teams and play a couple of practice rounds. And then they're all going to be flying to Australia. And they're going to be playing a LIV event in Australia. That's a haul.
That is
a haul. Like that's a – I'm sorry, LIV. That's a dumb schedule. That's a dumb schedule. Now, I understand, like – the seasonal change because it's like autumn there and whatnot. So maybe it worked. Maybe it just fits on the calendar, and that's the only way you could do it if you want to go to Australia. But you're taking these guys like Brooks Koepka, Phil Mickelson, Patrick Reed, Joaquin Neiman. I'm trying to think of some others that Thomas Peters. I'm trying to think of some other guys that were on LIV that made the cut, meaning they had to play a marathon match on Sunday at Augusta. And you're forcing them at the end of this week to get on a plane. Like, they're going to get on a plane in like 3 days to fly all the way to Australia to get ready for a LIV event in I don't think it's in Melbourne. I don't know if it's in Sydney. Abilene, maybe? It might be there. But that is a flight. That is a flight. I looked it up one time. For me to leave Nashville, and again, they're probably leaving from California or wherever. For me to leave Nashville, if I needed to go to Melbourne, Australia, for whatever reason, it's a 36-hour trip with various stopovers and layovers. I just randomly looked that up because I was like, I wonder how far it would be to go to Melbourne, Australia. 36 hours from the time I leave my house to the time I land in Melbourne. Again, spending time in airports, on the plane, in the plane.
Right. I want to go.
They're flying private, but that's so like, far.
I want to go, but I don't know.
That is a haul in the airplane. And it would have been fine at any other time in the calendar, but to make these guys who are mentally exhausted to be flying 30-something hours to Australia to play a LIV match, I mean, I wonder if that's working out the way they thought it was going to work out.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Cliff Kingsbury is going to be joining Lincoln Riley's staff at USC, just basically completing one of the more lucrative arcs that you can have from being fired as an NFL head coach to just basically landing back in the college game at the University of Southern California. So remember when Cliff Kingsbury, who went 4-13 in that final season, he gets fired. Remember he went off to where, Tahiti? Was it Bora Bora? I don't remember. But he went with his girlfriend, his model girlfriend, and they were under the waterfall in Tahiti drinking, drinks on the beach, enjoying the payout that the Cardinals had to give him on his contract. And then he stretched and finally realized, getting kind of bored of this place, I guess. Got his agent making phone calls and whatever, and then landed a job at USC. He will be the quarterback's coach of the Trojans, eventually working his way back up, because that's how it works. That's how it works. But he didn't do anything wrong at Arizona other than not win any games. There wasn't any scandal or anything like that. So I expected him to land on his feet. It's just nice when you are a coach in any sport, when you get let go, and then you basically, your first thought is, let's just get out of town for a while. Let's go someplace where it's relaxing and we can stay, I don't know, a month or whenever or however long we want. So he is now going to be a quarterback's coach at USC. Buzzing about the Baltimore Ravens yesterday, Odell Beckham Jr. agreeing to a $15 million deal. That was announced on Monday, so it was announced yesterday. And we're still wondering about the future of the Ravens quarterback situation. We almost got close to 2 weeks away from the draft. The Ravens and Eric DaCosta, general manager, we're talking about this last week, had said that the team is in the, you know, is would consider a quarterback with the draft pick that they currently have, which made me question, well, okay, do you want Lamar Jackson, or how is that going to work? Because you on one hand, you said you were 100% sure that he was going to be a Raven. Then he asks for a trade. You still think you're going to work something out. But then you're mentioning in the draft that you could be taking a quarterback, depending on player availability, how you grade out the draft. Meaning, if a quarterback is the best graded player on the draft, you would take him, which didn't make any sense to me, because who wants to deal with the same situation the Green Bay Packers have been dealing with? But when they did it, they were dealing with two older quarterbacks in Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers. They were dealing with two quarterbacks whose time they weren't sure was going to end. In this situation, if you're 100% sure that you've got Lamar Jackson at 26, why would you bring in a rookie quarterback in the first round of the draft when you know that by the time that young man gets through with his rookie contract, you're going to have a bad decision to make, which is, I don't know if we're going to keep him because we may have Lamar Jackson who's going to be 30 and still rolling along. Maybe, you know, you're trusting that he wears out his welcome or he's not successful. When you want him and you're going to pay him as if he's going to be successful. So it didn't make a lot of sense to me, but it could be posturing. It could be a situation where the Ravens are sort of deflecting. Now, this signing of Odell Beckham Jr. has me wondering, do they know something that we don't know yet? Did they bring in Odell Beckham Jr. just because? Or do they bring in Odell Beckham Jr. because they really do think that in the end, they will be landing Lamar Jackson? The Lamar Jackson will play either A, play on the non-exclusive franchise tag, which would be amazing. I can't imagine it would happen, but whatever. Or they think they're going to work out a long-term deal. As we've been pointing out with this story over and over again, it's not even so much about the guaranteed money now. It really is who holds the cards. Who holds the cards? Is it the Ravens? Because right now, they have Lamar Jackson. They have him. Lamar Jackson either plays for them in 2023 or he doesn't play at all in 2023. That's up to him. That's up to him. If he wants to sit out a year, he can sit out a year and force the Ravens' hand. And that might be where DaCosta was going when he said, well, we might draft a quarterback depending on how our board looks. Now, remember, that was a cool little way of sort of deflecting, because he was basically saying, we're not drafting a quarterback. Oh, no. I didn't say we were drafting a quarterback. I say we might draft a quarterback if the board works out that way. He's sort of falling back on the tradition of the draft of, You just take the best player that's on the board. And if the best player on the board is a quarterback, well, there's nothing we can do. Our hands are tied. We got to go with the quarterback. Right? But we know that's not true. That most teams don't do that. In fact, a lot of teams don't do that. In fact, if every team did that, we would just have first round quarterbacks all over the place, not getting work, not doing anything, because the teams that drafted them would have been like, well, there was nothing I can do. I have a Pro Bowl quarterback, but he was the best player on the board. What am I supposed to do? Take a position of need? What, are you nuts? No, you take positions of need when it's available. You might take best player on the board if you're lousy and you have a bunch of holes to fill. Like, there's no science to the NFL draft. I'm sorry. People think there's an overriding strategy with all 32 teams. There isn't. Some teams draft need. Some draft best player available. It depends on your circumstance. Again, if I'm 3-14 and I go, oh, God, I need a quarterback, I need an offensive line, I need a defensive end, and my secondary's garbage. Well, then I might look at the board and go, who's the best player available? That's who I'll take. Right? If I need a quarterback, if I desperately need a quarterback, and I've got a guy that's got first-round talent, but he's not the best player on the board, I might take the quarterback anyway. Right? Like, there's just different ways to play this out. So, to me, I'm really curious as if the Ravens may know something more about their Lamar Jackson situation than they or Lamar Jackson is letting on. Are they close to a long-term deal? Do they really feel confident that he's going to be their quarterback? Or did they get Odell Beckham because they're like, well, whoever's going to be the quarterback is going to have Odell Beckham to throw to.
Yeah, they're building around Hundley.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Right? No matter who it is. Like, if somebody falls in our lap and we take one of the top quarterbacks that are on the board in the first round, well, God bless us, because he'll have Odell Beckham Jr. to chuck the ball to. Or did they make this deal to tell Lamar Jackson, we're not messing around. Now let's get back to the table and start talking. Because we're not trading you, no matter what you want. You don't want to play on a $32 million non-guaranteed deal. We get that, but that's the way it works. That's the arsenal that we have to keep you. So we know you're not going to sign that. We have until July to figure this out. We just shown you a commitment to your offense. We did two things this offseason. We got you a really good offensive coordinator, and we just got you Odell Beckham Jr., who yes, coming off a torn ACL, but was on the way to becoming Super Bowl MVP in that game against the Bengals. So take that, three-time Pro Bowler. He's 30, but he's still very effective. So we think that we are showing you that we are committing to a better offense for you. So why don't we get to the table and sit down? Now, if he gets to the table and sits down and goes, well, I want a fully guaranteed contract, Steve Biscotti, Eric DaCosta, John Harbaugh can look at him and go, no one's giving that to you. You've had a month. Can you read the tea leaves?
Yeah. I swear,
like,
that's
gotta
be.
We're sorry, but where is your guaranteed contract? Who gave it to you? You are free to negotiate with any team in the league. They have the permission to come to you with a contract. And here's the thing. People are saying, well, the teams don't want to negotiate with Lamar because then the Ravens have matching offers and they don't want to do Baltimore's dirty work. I agree with that to an extent. But I will tell you right now, if you are, let's say, Arthur Blank, and that doesn't count now because he's committed to his quarterback. But let's say you're Arthur Blank, just to use an example, and you want to offer him a $240 million fully guaranteed deal, you'd throw that right on the table.
Yep.
You would throw that right on the table because you know the Ravens aren't going to match that. You know that. Because they didn't put it together before.
Where was Deshaun? He was 230, right?
230.
What if they just went 231 fully guaranteed?
Right.
230 and a half. I mean, so, whatever it would be.
So anybody that's coming at Lamar Jackson with 250, 170 guaranteed, right? A deal similar like that. Well, that's doing the Ravens work for them. Right, that's setting the bar and helping the Ravens figuring out market value. But you have every right on the Ravens side of the table to go, are we playing around with this nonsense? You're not getting one. I'm sorry, but you've had every opportunity to explore other teams wanting to offer you what Deshaun Watson's getting. You're not going to get it. It's not coming. And that's just the reality of the market. So if you want to make more than $32 million as a starting quarterback in the NFL, which you should, let's negotiate so we get you $40 million a year, but a portion of it is guaranteed and not all of it, like any other quarterback.